Now it gives me great pleasure in welcoming our featured speaker, Bob F.
Wow. My name is Bob and I'm an alcoholic. You know, I'm sober today by the grace of God and the program, principles, and steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and by the love, inspiration, and the friendship, an example that I've had over the years from men and women like you here tonight. And I'm forever grateful for that. You know, and before I start talking about my favorite topic, which is Bob, it's all about Bob. You know, I'd like to thank Kristen for asking me to speak tonight. You know, it's always an honor and a privilege to be able to speak in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't know if it's a pleasure, but it's an honor and a privilege. You know, a few weeks ago, I was talking to an old timer. And I told him I was going to speak at the South County Speaker Group meeting here. And he goes, what date is that? And I said, August 4th, on a Saturday. And he goes, oh, that's the big meeting. He says, oh, you're gonna do good. You know, you got a lot to give. You have much to share. And my chest got pried out, you know. And I have this Bob ego. It goes out like this. See, my ego doesn't know it goes this way. It goes circular, too. And he said, what day was that again? And I said, it was August 4th, Saturday. And he says, oh. By the way, who's going to be the main speaker? Yeah. You know, it wasn't the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous that my feelings got hurt. It won't be the last. You know, sensitive alcoholic. You know, and I like to welcome the newcomers that are here tonight. There was a lot of newcomers. I had the list coming down and I couldn't catch up. But I'd like to welcome you tonight. And if you didn't introduce yourself as a newcomer, welcome. You know, it's my hope tonight by sharing one alcoholic with another alcoholic, that you can stop and think and go, you know what? I felt like that. I understand what you mean there. And maybe this program too can work for you. That's my hope for tonight for you. And welcome to our visitors, you know, especially our Fresno visitors. They're not only here to give me support, but to keep me honest, you know. And happy birthday to those who celebrated your birthdays. God, there's a lot of sobriety here. A lot of sobriety, and it's always wonderful to hear the expression of gratitude on the birthdays, you know. And I'd like to acknowledge my sponsor, Victor, and he's here with his wife, Kathy. Thank you for showing me the way. Thank you for allowing coming into my life and showing me leading by example. You know, I started drinking when I was in my 20s, and I started drinking when I was 22, and I crossed that line when I was 24. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 29. My sobriety date is September 11, 1990. You know, and I drank, and I drank, and I drank until the booze drank me. And I was born and raised in Fresno. And towards the last of my drinking days, it was almost 28 years ago, was on my last drunk. And I had a little bit of money left in my pocket. And I was renting a room from a gentleman. He had two rooms in a big garage. And I liked that house. The reason I liked that house is when I walked in there, he had a big lock on that door that led from the garage to the two rooms. And he was a country singer, and he sang in Clovis. So in that garage, he had his master bedroom, he had his recording studio, and he had his bathroom. So when I saw that door with the lock on it, I figured, you know what, it's not going to mess up my drinking. Because at that time, that's what I lived to do. I lived to drink. You know, I drank and I drank and I drank. And in my little room, I was able to fit my full-size bed right in that little room. And I had on the side of the full-size bed, I had my clothes all neatly rolled up and folded up, the socks, their military style. And in my closet, I had three shirts that were ironed and pressed because I cared. In case you came by, you would know that I wanted to look good. You know, I'm heavily into depression management at the time. You know, I wanted to look good on the outside, but dying in the inside. That's the way I was. You know, and I had another roommate, and his name was Bob, too. And he was from Florida State. You know, and I called him Raging Cajun Bob because he would drink Jim Beam, Jack Daniels. And at 11 o'clock, he could shut it off and go to work the next day. And when he'd drink, he'd howl, and he'd growl, and he'd do the tomahawk chop, and he was crazy. But he'd go to work the next day. There was a difference between him and I. You know, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that. You know, and at that time, Four horsemen were after me. The despair, the bewilderment, the frustration. You know, and I could add to that the fear, the anger at myself for living the way I was living. You know, all I could do was think about drinking. You know, I came later to know the obsession of the mind and the physical allergy of the body because I couldn't stop. I lived to drink. I lived to drink. And I had no friends at the time. All the friends, they said, no, we can't hang with you no more, Bob. We can't hang with you. First of all, you have no more money and you're not holding anymore, you know, for the other group. I used to go on the other west side of Fresno and get all involved in the extracurricular activities over there, you know, and get myself into trouble. And I'm a garbage disposal at the time, you know. Whatever you had in front of you, I would do it. Anything to keep the drink going and going and going. That's why I lived. I loved the binge drink. I mean, that's how I lived, you know. And my friends would say, you know, we don't want you to party with us anymore. Because when we go and we do that, during the 80s, they had that other stuff that kept the drinking going. They say, you know what, Bob, you like to look behind curtains. You like to look underneath the doors. You're always saying the cops are coming. You know, you play that peekaboo, and we don't want you around us anymore. So I stopped doing that. They didn't want me around, and my family didn't want me around anymore. I ostracized myself and my family because they were sick and tired of bailing me out legally and financially. And it was always, Bobby, when are you going to kill yourself? When are you going to kill yourself? So they didn't want me around. Basically, I pulled myself from them because it was no good for me to go visit them. You know, and I was unemployable. Couldn't work. You know, I used to work in a variety of temporary agencies there in Fresno. There's four big ones over there. So I'd work 3 weeks, you know, quit. Because as a practicing alcoholic, I'm a fast starter. And I'm a lousy finisher. Because you'd like me after the first week and a half. You want to hire me. You want to keep me. You know, the following week I get that paycheck and I'm off to the races. I'm gone. You know, and I call in sick. You know, my relatives died multiple times. You know, and they got tired of that. So they said, Bob, we don't want you calling us up no more. Don't call us up. We'll call you. You know, I had no God in my life. You spiritually or religious-wise as well. You know, it was always, God, please get me out of this jail. God, please get me out of these handcuffs. God, please help me. You know, and I was angry at God. I was angry at, how could you allow me to live like this? You know, so what I did is I took the last of my money and I went on over to Blackstone. I was born and raised in Fresno. I was living on a little house on Fresno and Gettysburg. And I went over there to Thrifty Gin and I picked me up a half a gallon of Thrifty Gin, four bottles of King Cobra. You know, don't let the smooth taste fool you. You know, and that good beer, a case of Meisterbrau. You know, the good stuff. And I said, you know what, this is going on. And I went back and here I am walking along the street and I got the bags and I'm going to do it because as an alcoholic, I'm going to make it happen. There's nothing that's going to keep me between that and that drink. And I was going to pass away by alcoholic poisoning. So I sat down on that beanbag chair and I started throwing it down. And I blacked out and I passed out and I blacked out and I passed out. One of the times that I woke up, I saw a man at the doorway. And he was sitting there, and he was standing there, and he was looking at me. And I'm laying down in that beanbag chair, and he came and he picked me up. And I don't know if any of you have ever walked a drunk out before, where you hold him like this and you two-step it out. Well, that's what he did for me. And he walked me out, down off that porch, down the driveway into his truck. You know, and I knew I wasn't being arrested because I had no handcuffs on. You know? And he took my head and he put it under the door so I wouldn't hang my horse. Banged my head on the door, and he put the seatbelt on me. And to this day, I remember those kind eyes just looking at me, you know, and he told me everything was going to be okay. I woke up again, passed out, and I woke up, and I was in St. Agnes Hospital. That's over there in Herndon, in Fresno. And he was checking me into the hospital. I thought to myself, how could this man check me into the hospital? Either got to be family or relative. How could he do this? And I passed out, and I fell asleep again. I passed out again. I woke up the next day, and I was laying down in the hospital bed, and I heard my mom and dad talking to the doctor. And I heard my dad tell the doctor, you know what, we can't do this anymore for him. He's on his own. We are not going to pay these bills, and he's on his own. And I heard my dad and my mom walk out down the corridor, and my mom, she stuck her head in the doorway and said, you know, son, mijo, why do you do this to yourself? We love you. We love you, but we can't help you anymore. So they they cut me off there. So I sat down on that bed, and I just laid there, and I didn't know what to do. I was bewildered. I was hurting inside, and I was asking God for help. And the doctor came in, and he said, "You know what? I might have a plan for you, but we're going to have to discharge you. You have no health insurance." So I sat there, and he says, "I have a plan, and I'll come back and see you." So he came back in a couple hours later, and he said, "You know what? There's a bed open at the VA hospital on Wednesday, and this being Sunday, you cannot drink for the next 3 days. Can you do that?" And I said, "Yeah, I think I can." And he says, "Let me give you a suggestion. Why don't you attend some Alcoholics Anonymous meetings?" And I did. So I was discharged from the hospital, and I called up my last friend that I had, and he came and he picked me up. And he took me to his house. I didn't go back to Country Bob's house. I went back to his house. And I called up the AA hotline. And for those of you that have that service commitment on the AA hotline, I thank you. Because you saved one alcoholic that day. You know, and they pointed me off to the Lano Club there in Fresno. And my first meeting at the Lano Club was I came in through the back door. And I was greeted. You know, there was a man there, and he pulled down the steel chair. They had the steel chair, and he sat me down. He asked me if I wanted to have any coffee. He showed me where the cake is, and oh, if any of you know me, I love cake. You know, I love cake. And he showed me where the bathrooms were at. You know, he was of service. And I looked around, and I saw the steel tables around in the Lano Club. It's those tables that have the little rubber on it. You catch your hair on the arms like that. You know, and I said, "Oh, my God." And they smoked. Smoke all over the place. You know, and I look up on the walls, and I seen two murals, and it had numbers on there and statements. And I saw live and let live, one day at a time, easy does it, think, and later on I was told that didn't apply to me. But the biggest one that hit me was surrender the win. That's what I heard at the Lano Club, surrender the win over and over and over. And I thought, oh my God, I'm in a cult, you know, I'm in a cult. So I went home the next day, and that man that greeted me that night took me to AA meetings Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. That's what we do for each other. And that's what I've learned here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're a giving program, and we take care of each other. Now, I got admitted to the VA hospital, did my 28 days, and I found out at the time, at that time, it was not looked upon very good if you're in a treatment program. That's how it was. But I found that the VA, the 28-day program, was a bridge to Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a bridge to God. And that's what I found there. You know, I got done and I was got out of the 28-day program. And I was going around. My sponsor had me going around meetings in Fresno. And he'd have me introduce myself. You know, he says, "No, you need to introduce yourself." Because the way I was an isolated individual. I didn't like to meet people. He says, "You're going to go up and greet and meet and introduce yourself to people." And at first, when I first started doing that, I'd look at your knees. Then I look at your shoulders, and then I can look you in the eyes and say, "I'm Bob." And that's what I did. You know, and also too, at night, I was living off Social Security and bus tokens and top ramen. That's what I had, 45 days of sobriety. And my sponsor suggested to me, he said, "You know those 8 o'clock meetings at night, the bus stops running, doesn't it?" And I said, "Yes, it does." He says, "Well, you ask somebody for a ride home." And so I'd go to those meetings, and you guys would give me a ride. The fellowship would give me a ride home. And if you did not have a car, you'd point to somebody else who had a car, and they'd give me a ride home. You know, and depending on the length of sobriety on the ride home, that would be the length of speaker meeting I'd get, because it depended on how many years they had that they would talk to you, because they want to talk to you 45 days. I get that, you know. And sometimes I think we're driving all along Fresno, you know, and they got me home. They got me home. One Saturday, I was sitting there in the beanbag chair. I was 65 days sober. And I was watching the troops being deployed to the Persian Gulf. And my phone rang. And I picked it up. And there's a professional voice on the phone. And he says, "Are you Robert G. Felix, Jr., 57235? And I'll stop there. And I said, "Yes, I am." He says, "You've been directed to participate in Desert Shield. You need to report tomorrow at 1800 hours, which is 6 p.m. on Sunday." So I did what I was told to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I called my sponsor, and at the time, there's no text, and there's no internet. You can't do any of that. There's an answer machine. So I left it on the answer machine. I called my mom, and I hadn't talked to my dad in a year and a half. That just didn't work. I told her what I was doing, and I went to the armory the next day. And I went in there, I saw my section chief, and I said, "Sir," I said, "Sergeant, don't know what to do." And he said, "Go talk to the chaplain up on the second floor." So I go up on the second floor and I see the chaplain, and I sit down and I introduce myself, and I said, "I'm Bob, and sir, nice to meet you." I said, "I was told downstairs that we cannot take any books overseas of the Persian Gulf that have God in them." And I said, "I have this blue book. It has no writing on it. And I promise if I take it overseas, I'll keep it buried in my rucksack, in my duffel bag. I'll keep it out of sight, out of mind." And he looked at me, and he's leaning back, and I knew it was coming. And he says, "Don't worry about it. I'm taking my big book." Major Bob had 22 years of sobriety, and he was from Arcadia. And if any of you don't know about the military on a detachment unit, which I was the headquarters of, you don't know who your chaplain is until you get activated. And then they pull from a chaplain all over the state of California. And that's what they did here. And I floated down the stairs. You know, and I said, "God has this covered." And I came to believe the power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And I got a little bit of sanity that day. And I mobilized, and I ended off over in the Persian Gulf on... And I arrived with the big book in one hand and M16 in the other. That was me. You know, on January 16th, 1991, when it started hitting off. And, you know, we had time to get our stuff together. And I read the third step prayer. That's what I did. That's what I was taught to do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I was an advanced detachment, so I was always out. I was always up front of the company. So we got to the day when I got my orders and I went out to the western part of the Arabian Desert. I was out there. 2 weeks ahead of the company would follow up. You know, 2 weeks later, the company would follow up, and Major Bob would be there. He'd be there. And he'd crock that finger over here, and I'd see him 200 yards away, and I'd go over. I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "We're having a meeting." So we'd go inside of his tent, and he has a little card table there, and we'd sit around the meeting. And I'd read chapter 5 through the ABs and the Cs. And he'd read the 12 traditions. You know, and we'd share, and he'd have a topic, and we'd talk about a topic. He asked, "Are there any questions you have?" And we'd share. One alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic. That's what I've been taught here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what we did. And we'd laugh about the seventh tradition, you know, where we're going to mail it off to. You know, and it was a tough time for me, you know, and that's where I came to really put my dependence on God. And if you read chapter 3, in the 12x12, you see on the bottom of page 38, where it talks about World War II, where us AAs went overseas, and most of us came back sober than the ones that stayed here because of their dependence on God. And that's what I found there in that desert. To this day, that's what I have. I don't forget that. So I started the outline of my fourth step when I was out there, and I hid it, and I put it there in my big book. I kept my big book in a Ziploc bag. I kept it in a duffel bag. At night, I'd get underneath the poncho liner with my red flashlight, and I'd read the big book. I love Dr. Bob's story, Bill's story. You know, and the stories in the back of the book helped me identify. Those stories in the back of the book is what kept me sober and helped me to be in touch with you. And that's what I did for the next 6 months or so. And I came back in July of 1991. I came back to Fresno in a ticker tape parade. I had arrived, you know. I had arrived. My dad met me there. My mom met me there. And everything brushed away. Everything that Alcoholics Anonymous promised me did happen. You know, my dad wanted to meet Major Bob. And he thanked Major Bob for keeping me sober. And Major Bob told him, no. It's one alcoholic helping another alcoholic. And my last goodbye to Major Bob, he crocked that finger over there and he says, "You know what you need to do." And I said, "Sir, I've already done it. I've already called my sponsor. I'm meeting him at the Alano Club at the 11 o'clock step study meeting on Saturday. That's my home group in the valley." And that's where I got sober. You know, my first meeting back, it was great to be back. I walked in that Alano Club and you loved me and you welcomed me. And I was so grateful to be there. And I was sitting next to my sponsor in the non-smoking section, right? You know, that never works. I didn't even mind that the hair was getting caught on there. I was even serving coffee, you know? And I looked across the room and I saw this beautiful young lady. And I thought, oh my goodness, I don't stand a chance with her. And I went off to my own and I said, you know what? I got to meet that young lady later on in that end of the meeting. And tonight she's my wife. You know, we've been married over 21 years. And she's been my inspiration. She's told me to do things that I didn't think were possible to do. 10 months sober, I'm sharing everything that I wanted to do. The old timers told me this, you know what, Bob? You're young enough. Not only are you going to get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, but you're going to be a productive man in society. What are you going to do with yourself? You know, I did what was suggested. I got into service work. I started doing volunteer work at the VA hospital. I was there 3 to 5 times a week. That's what I did. You know, and at 10 months to 2 years of sobriety, when the world is coming down, the best thing I could do is run to that hospital. Because I always felt better when I would help another alcoholic. That's what I was taught here. Start secretarying the Wednesday night meeting. There's nothing like doing a speaker meeting because you can be the speaker seeker. And what you do is you go out through Fresno and you find all the different speakers and you get to go listen to them. And then you get to get their fellowship. And so your network or your fellowship that you know of Alcoholics Anonymous gets wider and wider and bigger and bigger. I started doing volunteer work at the VA hospital. At the Veterans Affairs at Fresno City College. And I was a service there too as well. You know, and one of my favorite was working detox up there on the 4th floor at the VA hospital. You know, one day I went into the hospital and I used to wear this blue smock. A nice tag on there because I had to look good, of course. You know, I've only 12 months of sobriety. And in November 1991, I get up there and the nurse says, we got a live one. And just like they say in the book, I got a live one. I said, oh, okay. Been doing this for a little bit. So I go in there and I walk in there and there's a young man sitting in the corner there. And he's got a vocabulary on him. He still does. No, and I got him some pajamas. They were too small, so he enjoyed the weekend in too small pajamas. You know, and I'll never forget that. You know, this man, we've been together for close to 26 years, hitting meetings together, 270 meetings in 90 days, and that's the type of men I surrounded myself with in the early days of sobriety, and even to today. You know, it's my brother Jeff here from Fresno, and. As I got more and more in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had such a trouble with that fourth step. Me being the intellectual that I am, the powerhouse that I am, I could never follow those directions in that big book. And at the time, there was no internet. You couldn't Google. You follow pamphlets, and you know my sponsor would have to break it down and piecemeal by piecemeal. And I just suffered so much. And one day I was walking across, and the old-timer said, come on over here. I need to talk to you. What is going on with you? I said, I'm having trouble with this fourth step. You did the best you can. I said, yes, I did. He says, well, grab your sponsor over there and go do your fifth step. He gave me permission to do my fifth step, and I went and I did it. You know, marvelous. You know, I found out my sponsor was sicker than I was, you know. You know, and one of the things that I wanted to do when I got back in Fresno, when I was discharged from the hospital, the doctor had mentioned to me that I had called up a church to come and pick me up. Because how did that man appear? And I called that church and I said, my name's Bob, and about a year ago, I called you up and I said that I wanted to kill myself, that God had abandoned me, and that I needed help. Why had God forsaken me? And she said, I don't know who you are, but I'll take a message and I'll get back to you. So about a week later, my mom and dad had invited me to live back home with them. And I was attending Fresno City College. And I got my dad said, the church called. I don't know what it's about, son, but you need to call them. And I said, sure, Dad. And I called them up. And the secretary there told me that the man that picked me up was a Monsignor, Monsignor John. It just so happened that is not his parish. It has just so happened he was there the day that I called up. Just so happened. God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself over and over and over. So I asked around Fresno and I found out that he was attending meetings of Fresno Fellowship on De Chico's on Mondays at 8 o'clock. So I go into the meeting there at 7:45, a little bit earlier there, and I walk and I scan and I look around and I see him. And he jumped up immediately. And he said, my son, you've been lost, now you're found. And we hugged each other. And God doing it for me what I couldn't do it for myself. We missed the meeting. We went outside and we talked for 2 hours. And we sat and we talked with each other. And we shared. And I told him where I had done, where I had been. You know, how God had been a part of my life. How I just done my fifth step. How I was in service. You know, it was not about bragging. It's just the things that you have taught me here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, 5 years later, Cindy and I were planning our wedding. And she asked me this. She says, why don't we have Monsignor John marry us? And I found Monsignor John. He was at another parish. And if anybody's familiar with the church that we're in, you have to be in a certain parish to get married in that parish. But him being the way he was able to pull strings. And we got married in his parish. With Brother Jeff as my best man. If you come to our house, we have a picture of Monsignor John, Cindy, and Jeff. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my dream was to go back to school and be an engineer. And I told Cindy about it, and she said, you can do it. I said, no, I can't. It's just too hard. You can't do it. The old timer said, put in your paperwork and go for it. You can get it done. And they pushed, and they pushed, and they pushed. I love those old timers there in Fresno. Surrender to win. That's what I heard. And I did that, and I applied, and I wanted to go down to UCLA. God had other plans. He picked Cal Poly for me. So I came over here to the Central Coast, and what was suggested to me is get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous wherever you're at. And I got involved, and my home group became the Melody Group, 9 o'clock. You know, above Slow Brew, 9 o'clock, Saturday morning. And I became a part of that group, and I attended Monday night meetings over at the Mid-State Bank. And those old-timers are no longer with us, but I do remember them. You know, and that's what I did. And I'd call my sponsor and I'd tell him, you know what, it's so hard here at Cal Poly. Everybody's so smart. He'd say, go to more meetings. I said, but you don't know. You don't know how much study. Go to more meetings. And he hung up. It's amazing how much smarter I got when I started attending more meetings at the Frontier Group over there by the railroad tracks, the Alamo Club. I got smarter. You know. One of the things about sponsorship, the sponsor I had in the Valley, he was in H&I work. And he would come over and he would do H&I work over there at the California Men's Colony. And he'd visit me almost every other month at Cal Poly. And we would sit and we'd review and go through what I was doing. And he showed me by his act of sponsorship what we do for others when with our sponsees. I had very little money and he'd take me out. But he would always remind me, when you get that job, when you get that time, you need to do this for the other. In order to keep what we have, we got to give it away. And that's what he taught me. And that's what I do to this day. You know, I graduated from Cal Poly. We got out of there. You know, 6 months, 6 years of sobriety. And I talked it over with Cindy, and I wanted to get into the construction field. In the construction field, you're always out of town. And I'd be out of town on Sundays through Thursdays. And that's the life, the career I chose. So being green and right out of Cal Poly, I went to my first construction project. And I'm concerned. These guys are going to know I'm green, and they're going to eat me up. I don't know if any of you are familiar with construction, but they see somebody green up in the management, they're going to come after you. So I go walking in that trailer. And I look down, and I see the superintendent that they paired me up with. And I'll be darned if it's not another member from the Malady Group. I won't mention his name. I told him I wouldn't mention his name, but some of you probably could put two and two together. You know, that man, not only did he mentored me in construction. He sponsored me in construction. God doing for me, again, what I could not do for myself. And during that time, I was working hard on the 6 and 7 steps, trying to change that behavior, those character defects. And we'd laugh about it, and he'd talk about his, I'd talk about mine, and we'd do our work on it. You know, for the next 17 years, I was on the road in construction. You know, what I was taught to do is when you go to a meeting, when you go out of town, you get yourself involved. And back in the day, like I said, we didn't have internet. We had directories where you can call the AA hotline. And what I come to find out in our fellowship is you could call up or you could go to your fellowship, tell them where you're going to go, and somebody would have a directory. And you'd pocket that directory, and you'd take it, and you'd hit that first meeting. We'd hit that first meeting on Sundays. And then we'd bring an updated directory back to the fellowship to pass back. And you pass it on. That's what we did back then. You know, and I learned to be a part of the community, to be a service of the best of my ability, and that's what I did. I kept in contact with my sponsor, too, as well. You know, and I got to do that for the next 16 years. I've been able to work in military installations and pass the message on. I've been able to work with the sailors down at Point Loma in Coronado. I've been able to work with the soldiers out at Fort Huachuca. I've been able to work with the airmen in Nellis Air Force Base, Luke Air Force Base, Vandenberg Air Force Base. And I've also been able to work with the Marines down there at Camp Pendleton. And when I go and I attend one of those meetings, most of the time the men that are there, the young men are there, they're there because they got busted by drugs or alcoholism or something of the sort. So I was able to share with them my prior military experience and the trouble that I got in, and share with them that there is hope. And I thank God that I was able to do that. You know, during this time I was up in Fallon Naval Air Station, up there by Reno, and the snow was coming down. And I was getting restless, irritable, and discontent. And I thought to myself, let's get to a meeting. And I went into the meeting there at Fallon, and the meeting in Fallon is in an industrial park. And it was snowing, and it was coming down, and I walked into that meeting, and they had a hearth going on with fire, and it was just beautiful. And I sat down, I'm home. You know, and I sat there, and there was this young man after the meeting, tall man, handlebar mustache from Alabama. I could barely understand him. You know, I could barely understand his drawl. And he asked me, would you be my sponsor? And I said, I sure would. I'm only going to be here for another year, but yes, I'll be your sponsor. So we went and they had dinner. All you know me, I love dinner. We had dinner, and I gave him a ride. And after dinner, we got him a big book. And I asked him if I could give him a ride home. And he got embarrassed. And I said, I'll give you a ride home. And, you know, it doesn't matter. And he said, okay. So we're driving on the outskirts of Fallon. I don't know if any know Fallon. We're driving, and we're going away from the houses. You know, we stop at the fairgrounds, and he says, I live here. So I go look out in the fairgrounds, and I see a pup tent. And I said, is that where you live? And he says, yes, I am. So I drive down the road there, and I have my headlights inside, and I can see inside that pup tent. You know, I can see his sleeping bag. I can see his toiletries, and that's where he was living at. He said he'd meet me at tomorrow's night's meeting. We met every night at a meeting. I asked him, how are you getting to meetings? And he says, I'm walking. See, this young man was walking 2 miles to get to a meeting. And that goes to show me, you will do anything to get to Alcoholics Anonymous if you want to. And that's what he did. He stayed sober for a year, and he went back to Alabama. And the family that he lost, he got it back. He called me up when he got back to Alabama. He said he got himself a sponsor. And I said, God bless you. That's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. One alcoholic helping out another alcoholic. That's what we do. You know, and I was on the road there for quite a while. And Cindy and I had been living in Arizona. In August 2014, I came flying in on Thursday night. And when I'd come in on Thursday night, Cindy loves her Cinnabons. You know, and I come in, and she didn't want her Cinnabons that night. She was jumping up and down, because the Arizona State Convention was happening that weekend. And the fellowship she was a part of, the Westside Fellowship, was going to go attend. And she wanted me to attend with them. And I said, no, that's okay. I'm too tired. And her being the way that she is, well, no problem. And she went. You know, that Saturday, I'm pacing around wondering how the meeting's going, of course. And she comes back home all fired up. And she says, the speaker was from Santa Maria. You know, she said, the previous week they announced a speaker from Santa Maria, and she got to meet him, and she said he rocked it. And I thought, wow, you know, maybe I should have gone. And she handed me his card, and I put it in my pocket, you know, and under my breath, I'm telling her, you know what, you don't need to make friends for me back home, you know. And I put that card, and I put it in my truck. You know, a year later, in July of 2015, we moved back here to the Central Coast. You know, I didn't immediately get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous like my better half did. You know, I was around here in Royal Grande, and I didn't want to participate in Orchid Fellowship. It just didn't happen. You know, and I got restable, irritable, and discontent. And that emotional just started beating on me. And it was suggested I go to a Thursday night meeting. You know, Cindy had mentioned this Thursday night meeting to me. It was a men's stag. You know, the men's stag there. And I go to this meeting and I identify and I'm attracted to one of the old timers in the AA sense of the way, you know. And he's got what I want. And he reminds me of the sobriety that I got sober with back in Fresno. You know, and I go up to him after the meeting. I can see he's busy. He needs to talk to others. And I go up and I get a suggestion from him. And I tell him thank you. And I go back and he gives me his card and I put it in my pocket and I go back to my truck. And I get in my truck and I pull the card out and it looks familiar. So I pull the card out from my truck and I match the cards together. And they're the same card. It was Lee C. He came over and he spoke to us in Arizona. That's God doing for me what I cannot do for myself again. God constantly put men in my life and women when I needed it the most. You know, and I got involved and I got a local sponsor. And he suggested I get in service. And what I did is I introduced myself around, indoctrinated myself into the Orchid Fellowship, and I got to know people. You know, tonight there's men from the Tuesday night meeting I go to, the Wednesday night meeting I go to, and the Thursday night meeting I go to. And I freestyle the rest of the week. Freestyle means I hit meetings and Jimmy the Wrench on Sunday. But the Thursday night meeting, I love it the most because it's men from other meetings and we all group together. You know, we all group together. You know, they got a podium there too. It took me a hard time to get used to that podium, you know. They didn't do it right, you know. That's not how we do it in Fresno, right? So, and San Luis Obispo. You know, for any of you men that need a Thursday night meet, you're more than welcome to come and see us. You know, we're going to greet you. We're gonna love you whether you want us to or not. You know, we are. My life is sobriety today. I've been blessed to be a sponsor, and I have two young men that I'm fortunate to spend time with. You know, one comes on Monday night, and the other comes on Tuesday night. You know, the highlight, like our book says, the highlight of our day is meeting with newcomers and meeting with each other. You know, and I have had an opportunity to take one of the young men, and we went together to a retreat. And some of you wonder, well, what does a 27-year-old and a 50-something guy get on? You know, what do you do on the drive up? Well, you talk fellowship, and that's what we do. You know, that's what my sponsor did for me too. Victor took me to a sponsor down in San Diego. Mike took me to a convention down in San Diego. We won't talk about that much. I misbehaved a little bit. I got a little bit of a resentment. In order to be an old timer and speak at the old timers meeting, you needed 30 years of sobriety. You know, I'm only at 25 at the time. You know, sponsorship. You know, right when I think that I've done a lot of things that happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got asked to marry Jesse and Katie. A year ago, I got to perform their wedding. I didn't see that coming. You know, God is always doing for me what I cannot do for myself. And that's one of the blessings I've been able to do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my life today is amazing. And I know it sounds like Pollyanna. I've had my trials and tribulations. But what I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous is you get in service. When you're hurting, you go and you help another alcoholic. That is what has helped me to keep me sober. You know, when I was in high school, in junior high, I was this lonely guy. I was a lot of complexion problems. I was tall and I was skinny. You know, I was that geek that you saw off in the corner. I loved math. I loved sciences. You know, I had escape in books. You know, I never attended any dances. I never attended any sock hops. I just aged myself there. You know, I always wanted to go to homecoming dance. You know, I was, and I'm not saying this, oh, feel sorry for me. That's just the way I was. I was awkward. You know, and I always wish I could talk to that homecoming queen. You know, I always wish I could talk to her. You know, and it's through the grace of God in this fellowship, and this is the God honest truth, as I married the homecoming queen. My name is Bob, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. Thank you for allowing me to be a service man.
I think that deserves another hand this week.